There you are.
Yes. 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 It's
foretold that you will arrive. I checked the stars and you have arrived late, of course, but...
Sorry, my life.
Yes.
Anywho, hopefully I don't have any too many points where I need to blow my nose,
as I'm slightly under the weather, but that is fine.
We're all slightly under the weather. We live in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
I love that song. Welcome to your life. I mean, although I personally prefer, oh man, how's it go? Seeds of Love. That's another good one. Or, because I think it has a good beginning. It's got those are words. Oh my god, off to a great start. Anyways, hi, welcome to Just Here for the GLSR. My name is Sammy B, one of the admins and the driver of the 22. I am, of course, joined by the voice of GLSR. It is Chris Scala.
I am eating ice cream.
That sounds nice. As always, this show is brought to you by Black Horizon. I don't have a beer.
What?
I drank one already, so I have a empty glass that had water in it, but now that is empty too. But yeah, Talladega, it was
wild.
Yeah, but I feel like it was for the standard of what you can get for plate races. It was a more it was a better race than I was expecting. I think there is something to be said for not having the first race of the season not at a plate race, because I do think there's a degree of comfort that has been built up now with guys racing alongside each other and people know each other better. So usually when, you know, if we, you know, throw everyone out there when it's the first race of the season, it's like, okay, I don't know some of these people. How are they going to race? Where are they going to be? You know, you're still kind of building up those relationships. So I think actually putting this race in this particular part of the calendar worked well. So definitely have to be something interesting to consider going forward for how you pick out where tracks go. But it had definite wrecks, but you're going to get that at these tracks. Because even some of the cautions were smaller instances, really. I think you had your one or two pretty significant pileups, but it was not the cluster I was expecting it to be.
No.
It's never not full of controversy, though, because how the two first people who were coming up to the finishing line, neither of them won the race. Dane did not get credited with the win due to pretty hyper aggressively coming down and intentionally, as it was decided. excuse me.
Bless you.
Yes, coffee. and you know that he did not earn that win, so it was taken from him, and points penalties were assigned. The greater tragedy is the fact that you know, someone did, I think it was Luke Daniels, you know, heard my bemoaning last week and said that I no longer could do that because Stephen Miles has had it worse. And considering you are probably a half mile, quarter mile away from a win, and blank out, get spun, and then the collision that iRacing decided to use sent his truck backwards. Yeah, that's a tough break. So at the end of the day, it was JW Miller getting the dub. Congrats to him. But what a weird, it was a weird conclusion to an overall pretty decent race at Talladega.
Yeah, I mean, it had its ups and downs. I mean, we really didn't have the big, big wreck, which is good. Because I expected us to have ourselves some kind of huge pileup. And I think we did a good job of avoiding that from happening. I think that's credit to the league and to the drivers. I'm pulling up the website as we go here. This is me stalling. And, you know, it turned into, you know, the wild race that it did. I mean, we had a, I believe, a first-time pole sitter in Peyton Johnson.
Yes, that was. Yeah, he was up there. I think, didn't he line up alongside Blaine Sparling? Am I remembering that right?
I believe so. And yeah, it was definitely from the start was a. Just interesting. I mean, I guess so to say, everybody was pretty tame and pretty calm, you know, and got the race going. You saw some people go to the back. You saw some people working their way forward and that kind of thing. And, you know, and we went all the way to, what was it, lap 20, I think it was the first pit stop, or first caution.
I believe it was like 20 and, or 24 in that range.
Yeah, and that was where I know Brandon Alphen got into it. I know I'm trying to remember how it all started here off the top of my head.
It was something along the lines
of... It's been a long week, and it's still...
I believe it was something where Alphen and Springer were up front, and they both got pretty strong simultaneous pushes, and they both kind of got bumped center. I think it may have been Peyton on the inside line. I can't remember who was on the outside line.
Springer was on the inside line. He got pushed into the corner and it pushed him up and they hit each or net coded or something happened. And basically Ricky spun around is what happened there.
And I mean, I usually don't feel like this happens, but I feel like trucks got damaged, but somehow could stay more competitive than it should feel right. Cause I mean, he did get banged up in that and yet he still got a top five at the end of the day. It was a big pileup at the end, but he still got a top five.
He did. And yeah, I know there were some, I guess, apparently penalties for the caution or the last lap wreck there in the tri-oval that, you know, was kind of a second fiddle, so to say, to the actual last lap situation with the win that happened that I know some drivers were not happy about and that kind of thing. But it was one of many factors that came into play that in this race. I mean, we saw at one point, we saw the Ingram father-son up front. And I'm like, could this be interesting to see these two pushing each other to the win of this race? You know, we saw that going on. You know, we had obviously teamwork going on. You know, for a little bit, the TIX guys were up front there and looking like they could be on their way to doing a 1-2-3 finish or something like that. So that was going on. There was just so many little elements that went on in this race. Of course, with the 100% fuel, it stretched out the race to being merely almost a one-stopper. and there were just so many wild cards that happened, and of course the big one then comes into play, and I say the big one, but a bunch of medium ones, so to say. There really wasn't, like I said, the big one. As I'm thinking back here, because I'm literally replaying the race in my head, and I've actually got it over here on my screen. I'm kind of watching it again just to remember everything, because, like I said, it's been kind of there's been a lot of sleep on my part this weekend just from work and tiring and things like that. But nonetheless, it was Talladega. It definitely lived up to it. We had a controversial finish that I think is going to be talked about for a while. And, once again, it got me to a part where I felt like on the broadcast, I had to sit there and say, hey, let's not take this race away because there was controversy at the end, because I know that's something that seems to get brought up a lot. And I didn't really see it this time around, but I was more keeping an eye on it just in case it did.
I honestly believe this race really benefited from the 100% fuel. I think in the past, when you start getting into those pit cycles, that's right. When you start having the field jumbling up, you're having guys missing pit entry, hitting other people, maybe throwing a big aggressive block, trying to stay lead lap or try to stay ahead of someone. And because we were able to go for a much longer stints, I think it encouraged people to kind of believe that they had more time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is that really at the end of the day, it kind of felt like your two typical strategies, go for the front or hang back, both kind of worked. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze.
Go ahead. Bless you. And it just depended on no matter where you were in the field. It seemed like, even coming to the last lap, it's like I said to Kevin, as we were kind of talking about a little bit during the broadcast, it's like, if you're in it, you could win it. And we had a point again where it seemed like a good 20 to 25 trucks were sitting there in the lead pack, ready to potentially win this race.
Yeah. And I mean, the last restart had its own, you could talk about that last restart and all the different things that happened there.
Right.
Sean Peachin was set up feeling pretty good. I mean, I know he was, kind of getting shuffled in and out. Again, talk about the different strategies. I feel like there's a lot of TAX guys who were pretty far up, JW, Stephen Miller, who had been up the front all day. And then Sean and I were hanging back in 35th, just, cooling our heels. And then, Sean really got fortunate that one of those later cautions came out, because we were just kind of like in the back, and we said, the second we see any group of trucks go, we'll go with them. And right. So that was when we saw the Lap 1 Legends go. I think a group of KJD2 went. And so Sean and I, Blaine was way ahead of us. We were like, all right, this is it, go. And he overshot his pit box. So he went, and I think Kevin made the observation that, oh no, Sean missed pit entry, when really he was just that separated from our group.
Right. Yeah. I had actually seen Sean come in. So I think he just kind of misjudged with the way Sean merged in with the field. And that kind of thing. But yeah, no, I saw Sean come into the pits, obviously circumstances happened,
but that worked out, because then he was so separated from that second to last accident that I and Travis and many others got caught up in. He had a clean truck, had a couple great moves when Telder and Steve came together, and he they lost some momentum on the inside line, and he was able to kind of just wiggle his way through and went to first. Things shake out differently. Maybe that's Sean's win. But then I know at the very last restart, Freer jumped out with Bondo, and Sean had nowhere to go. He kind of fell back. The inside line got formed up. They went off. And then into two on the last lap was when they started all kind of ping-ponging together, and it became two-horse races, and then the front two ended in, disaster for both of them.
Right.
And then JW got past Strayer, and he got the win. But no, I would not put this in the category of a track or a race that was like, oh, I never want to do a super speedway again. Personally, I think every other time I've gone to them, I've kind of enjoyed them less and less. But, you know, they're a different style of racing. It requires a different mental approach. And I'm not going to say no, not skill set, because it is a skill set. I still think one of the most underrated plate racers in the league is Travis. He's so good at pushing. A lot of people get unsettled by it.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was I really enjoyed getting to see both the Ingrams up front. That was cool. Also, first time as teammates. I think it was first time as teammates. Both with the Ace Spicy Schemes trucks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was Talladega. I think for the most part, I don't think anyone was too surprised by what went down. I think you very much come into it with a sense of what you're getting yourself into. And right. Really, I think next week is going to kind of be a breath of fresh air for many people after 3 weeks of very different disciplines that don't suit the traditional mold of the type of driver in this league. So I think going to a track that has strong connections to the truck series we've run before, a traditional oval, will bring a lot of excitement to people. And then we'll have the back-to-back short track races, which will bring all sorts of tempers out.
Well, you got to remember too, this track we're coming up on this weekend or this week, Wednesday, races like a short track. It's flat, 1 mile, predominantly going to be a bottom line type track. So you're looking at a track that is going to, you know, create some issues, I think, out there. You know, Milwaukee Mile is one of the oldest tracks on the circuit. It was built as a dirt track and now has asphalt on it. It's a 1 mile track. The banking is like 6 degrees. It's super flat. And obviously, you got to be very careful because you can easily overdrive the corner. You can get the car to be tight. It slides up the track and then you have all types of issues in it. So it's going to be a challenge for these drivers. And I think, you know, some kind of are entering this race as in having 3 straight short track races because Milwaukee, the way it drives. And then of course you have Myrtle Beach on there. And can't remember the
Fairgrounds.
Off the top of my head. Fairgrounds, thank you. And you know, because of that, you're looking at, you know, I think more of a sense of a wild card. I mean, as we've kind of talked about already, this schedule has a unorthodox feel if you were to it, and you know, I think obviously it's going to play a key role in this series, just like every other race has done this season. I mean, every race has had their pros and cons to drivers that have favored and stuff. I mean, you've had the dirt track, you've had the road course, you've had the super speedway. Now, you know, you look at, this is your biggest track in the next 3 weeks, 1 mile. Then you got a 6/10 mile Nashville track, and then you got a 1/2 mile at Myrtle Beach. So I think this is going to be the week where, or 3 weeks, if you can survive these 3 weeks, I think you set yourself up, you know, very good for what's to come. And as I look at, you know, the point standings as we, you know, enter this race, you know, it's still a very tight battle. I mean, Fontaine's kind of running away with the lead right now, but after that, you look at Lucas Dreyer, you look at Luke Daniels, you look at Cummings, Canup, Sean Peachin, you've got less than 100 points separating 3rd through 14th right now in points. 15th is only 14 behind that. So the point standing is wide open right now in this league. And, you know, this is going to be the 3 weeks. If you can get through them and survive without having too many issues, then you're going to look pretty good going into the final couple races as we get out to Indianapolis and stuff to set the field for the playoffs.
Now, before we get too carried away talking about upcoming races and maybe our fantasy predictions, I want to make sure we hit on who we feel was our driver of the day at Talladega.
Driver of the day at Talladega.
I mean, I feel like my gut reaction, and maybe this is me just being a bit of a kind of a bleeding heart. Yeah, if that's the right
word. He doesn't
want
that.
I don't know if that's the right word. I think Stephen Miles didn't do anything wrong the whole day. He was right there for the win and just things didn't happen. Was just kind of up front contending the whole day. Was staying out of trouble, had a clean truck. I think he is an honorable mention up there. Beyond that, maybe, I mean, JW's kind of in the same boat, was, scrapping all day, was right there and got the win by being where he needed to be after the penalty got sorted out. But I guess, I'll be intrigued to see what your thoughts are, but there's no one individual who, jumps out at me. Again, I think Sean had a great race. Just tough restart there at the end and got caught up in it, but he did everything right, played it safe, and was there when he needed to be. I feel like it's hard to find a clear one unless you feel differently.
No, I mean, Steven's a good one, but I think I know Steven well enough to where he's not going to be one that says, look, I want the sympathy pick or something here for that. Yes, obviously he was more than unhappy about what took place. And, I've heard some valid points from his end. I've heard valid points from other ends too. I mean, one other thing that's looked at too is he was blinking and stuff at the end and, you see it on my screen and stuff. That's what kind of made it hard to make the call when I called Dane across the line. And if you listen closely on the broadcast, when it gets brought up that they're looking at the finish, I'm like, wait, what? Because I didn't think anything of a intentional wreck or anything like that. So with that said, like, that's where, I had my, feelings about that whole thing, but as I think about it, there's been so much controversy this week, it's not funny. In real life and off the track or on iRacing. So, man, let's see. Asked for a driver of the day. Yeah, I mean, Miles definitely did what he had to do. He put himself in the right position to win that race. So, I mean, I could agree on that. I don't see really, Cedric Ingram finished sixth, but again, there was a whole bunch of chaos in the last lap too that happened. So, trying to think of some drivers I remember during the race that ran up front and put themselves in position. Obviously you mentioned Ingram, father, son duo. You mentioned, Peyton Johnson for a little bit was up there. You know what? I think I'm just going to ride with you on this one is go Miles. I'm not doing it though out of sympathy. Or feeling bad for what happened, because yes, I do feel bad for the whole incident taking place and the fact that, there's no telling if he wins this race or not, obviously with what took place. And well, I guess there is telling because he hit the wall and went backwards. So, he put himself in the right place to win. Let's just put it like that. And because of that, I could say, yeah, let's go with Miles because of the way he put himself in the right way to win that race. I'll go with that.
All right. Well, back to where we were before in Milwaukee Mile. It's been a minute since we've raced at a track that does, again, has some pretty serious history in, just racing in general for, the United States, the region. You said it's one of the oldest tracks out there. This was the track where Christopher Dean broke through, after, being so close to winning that inaugural race, in season one. It took him, what was it? Season two he got that? Can't fully remember. I think it was two.
I think it was season two, if not three.
But he got that initial one. Mm-hmm. And he had that. Boy, I'm pulling this from the depths. I think he had, there was a late caution where I believe he got tires. I believe he had a tire advantage at the end, but I mean, he still raced the doors off of it. Or no, maybe he stayed out and other people pitted and he was able to hold them off. That sounds more correct.
I don't remember much about it, unfortunately.
Again, it is foggy, but it was a solid win. And that is a style of track that suits him and his style of racing. And then we had the infamous night race. we had an error in the input of the start time. I actually didn't even race that race. I remember I was watching it. I can't remember why I didn't do it, because I think I just wasn't mentally feeling up to it. And so I opted to not do it. And I was watching it, and like, I was hearing you talk about it on the broadcast. You're like, and it's getting darker out there. Will they be able to make it? Like, there's some people that are like, call the race. And people are like, no, I can still see. And then, you know, obviously there was the drama of Ricky was running pretty clear and away with it. And then we go back to a day race, and then he has an issue late, and then Bryson Clark wins. So we will not have that issue this time. But definitely some memorable moments have happened at this track. So I'm excited to add our third installment to it. And I actually think that if possible, I will try and actually go to the real Milwaukee Mile Race when it happens. Because, excuse me.
Yawning on the broadcast. That's good.
I can cut that out. I have the power.
That's fair.
I probably will forget.
For those who are watching, he just edited out his yawn or listening.
Maybe I'll just cut it.
If he keeps it in, then, well, you heard him yawn.
Well, I don't know. My apologies. I need to get more rest. Wow, brain. I am excited to add another installment, and I think I since I'm not that far of a drive from the actual track, I will try and go in real life. That's what I meant to say.
I see what you're saying.
So, fantasy wise, because we have talked a little bit about the properties of the track, the history of the track. I like the idea of the truck series going to more of these styles of tracks, more grassroots style stuff. I know IRP felt like a great success, and I know people in the Indy area who were excited to go and went. I totally see this being a formula that will work for them in the future, giving them a little more identity. I think that something all the series in NASCAR could benefit from a little bit is a clearer definition of what they are. I'm definitely going to try and make it to that one. Let's see. It's tough because I feel like Dean is great at this track. But I also feel like Dean hasn't been on the form he was when he was dominating at those styles of tracks. So at 153, I'm kind of giving pause. I'm not saying he wouldn't make my lineup. I'm just kind of having to think about it more. I think Lucas Strayer's been really hot. I mean, he's had a few top three finishes. He's sitting, I think third in points. And he is 140. I'm trying to think of some value guys who I still feel like Steven Miles is performing at a level well beyond his value at 115. I think I will take him. Beyond that, let's see. I feel like if you're going to swing for the home run of a guy who's going to be dominant, I feel like you got to put Sam Fontaine in there. I think these next 3 weeks, you'd almost be silly to not put him in there. He's good at short tracks. When he went on that tear at the end of last season, I feel like a lot of shorter, flatter tracks were in that portfolio. Gateway, Martinsville, So I expect to see him go out in dominant fashion. That puts me at 303. So
don't touch me. Don't touch me.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna try and find another value guy. I just gotta start picking names. I'll grab Strayer. What does that put me at? 443. So yeah, I need a pretty serious value guy in the the 100 to 110 range. No, too much. Travis? He likes his short tracks, but we've both had a tough season. I mean, Josh Gagnon, one of those two. I don't know if his foot's good enough yet.
Yeah, he's got a cankle problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have to shift around some of my choices because that's that putting what's. No, you know what? I'm gonna believe in my boy. I'm gonna say Travis Akavachi at 105. He loves a good short track, and I think he'll do okay at a flat track. That might not be the strongest lineup in the world, but I guess I'm going a little top heavy and big hedge picks. So puts me at 548.
Well, not bad there, Whippersnapper. But let me show you where I'm going with this one, because I'm going to go with more of a top heavy lineup here too, because there's a young man sitting down at the bottom of the standings in fantasy that has won championships in other leagues that are pretty daggum competitive. We just haven't seen his talent yet rise to the top because he's either been involved in accidents or hasn't been at the race. There's a guy that's $89 right now that you could put on this list, and I'm pretty sure he's going to run pretty well at the Milwaukee Mile. And that is the 4X driver, Anthony Keys. So I'm going with him. And if you really wanted to take a chance with a value pick, you can go with a guy who hasn't even finished a race in one piece this season. And that's down there at the bottom of Alex Bryson. Now, as I scroll up there, I did add also Stephen Miles to my lineup because Miles has been real hot right now. So by doing that, it opens up the spots for the two drivers that, one that should have won the night race, if you will, at the Milwaukee Mile, and the one that won the previous race, or the first race at the track. So I'm putting Dean and Springer in my lineup. So having that gets me at $539. So again, Springer, Christopher Dean, Stephen Miles, and Anthony Keys as the value picks for the four. Now, there's one driver that I'm going to tell you right now, nobody will even think of that actually finished in the top five in the second Milwaukee Mile race. And he sits down here at all of $100 on the dot. And it's not Tyler Brewer. That's Robert Lukens. Finished fourth in race number two at the Milwaukee Mile. Could be a sneaky, sneaky little pick right there for him. You could take a chance at Jason Branch. Branch has been running pretty well. He was up there at Talladega himself. He's had some good runs. And unfortunately, has had some bad luck in the end. Bryce McCune sitting down here at $110. He's had some tough luck this season, so he could be one to keep an eye on. Obviously, Luke Daniels has been hot. He's only at 128 right now. Bondurant, sooner or later, is going to turn his luck around. So I could see that 131 going up. And, so I might want to grab him at that kind of a pickup. You mentioned Strayer. Obviously, that dude's on fire right now. And even though things have happened this week with some stuff there, there's still free beers potentially there. So just throwing that element out there. And wow. I mean, there's so many good picks you could go in here. But if you go with the... Pick.
Me.
Alan Best? Oh.
No. Never pick me. When the tracks get smaller, just don't do it. Just don't do it. Save me.
Track got bigger. Look what happened.
I mean, I guess the safest choice would be just don't pick me.
I'm still the only guy that's won a race in your truck.
You're just gonna throw that right in my face.
Well, this is where, you know, it starts to get to the point where maybe I need to send you my broadcast setup and when we go next season to Talladega or Daytona, I jump in the truck and show you how it's done.
All right. Well, we'll do the Sammy switch and we'll have me in the booth. I don't know if people would like that.
They wouldn't, because I'd take half of them out.
Well, I mean, would that be any really different from what I do? Actually, I'm usually.
They'd rather be taken out by an actual league member, not by a broadcaster. Because that's what I would be known as. Oh, the broadcaster wrecked me.
It would certainly add an element of surprise.
It would definitely throw the boxing ring into a tizzy.
No, I'm okay with it being a little bit of a shorter show. But there is something you said on the broadcast, and I'm sure you were going to remind me, that was posed by a viewer as a question. And it was, what would be the Mount Rushmore
Ooh.
Of GLSR? And the first caveat I had to that was, would that only be for drivers or anyone, like any input into the league as a whole? Because I'll be frank, I think if it was like, you know, like a true, you know, in the, you know, the NASCAR Hall of Fame or any Hall of Fame, you can induct, you know, more than just players, you know, whether it's coaches mm-hmm. or whoever. But I would say the first person that I would feel that have to be on there would be you.
What?
Yeah. What would we just, you were saying it on the broadcast. You have broadcast every single race that this league has ever done. You've had a vast knowledge of all the different drivers and always have been a fun. So I personally feel that one of the four should be yourself. At least on mine. Well,
I appreciate you calling me, I guess, the Vin Scully of this series. But nonetheless, I will respectfully and humbly disagree. I think that when it comes to the Mount Rushmore of this series, you have to look at drivers. And I think I can understand everybody around. So, and what I mean by that is, yes, I guess you could say that counts me in, but I'm not counting myself in. Here's how I look at this. And I thought about this a little bit because it was a great question. And obviously I had time to kind of sit back a little bit and I'm like, man, who would I put on this mountain? And I think the original four that you could easily see right now would be Zach Allman. I guess Ricky Springer would be two. You would throw we talked about this too. Was it Calhoun? I think it was number three. I'm trying to remember the four drivers everybody mentioned.
I mean, would you put Fontaine?
Fontaine's working on it. Here's my argument though. Here's my argument. Springer has done his share of stuff in this league. He's got, you know, 10 plus wins. He got a championship. However, when you look at it, he hasn't even run enough races in his career to run two full seasons.
Right.
So I think on that standpoint, one, yes, it's impressive. But two, I don't know if you can put him on the mantle yet. Yet being the key word here.
So this is strictly, you know, driving prowess.
I think like Zach Allman. Obviously, he's been around all the way. This is his first season, or second season now he's missed. But he was here for the first six. Won two championships, all-time leader in laps, or I think is about to lose that record. But all-time wins, up there in the top laps led, most points scored in league history. Was here from the start. I believe he has the most poles, maybe even also. I mean, he's got so many stats and records that are on him. So I think he is an automatic shoo-in. You got to put him on there right now. So I would go, I would say Zach Allman deserves to go on there, like him or not. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, obviously he's still a kid and yada, yada, yada. People have their opinions. That's fine. But, you know, you got to go out there and produce on the track. And that's what he's done. I'm clicking on records right now on the website. He has the most laps led still by over 400 or 350 plus. He's got wins by two. He's got poles by six. He actually just got passed recently for most points scored. And one of the guys who passed him hasn't been here in a couple of weeks now. He still got bonus points secured by like 80. So he's done what he's had to do to be on top of the mountain. So I put Zach Allman up there on the top. He's right there. He's number one. I think Your number two driver on this list has to be William Calhoun. First ever champion. Went out and won the championship. Every season he's raced. Yes, he's missed seasons here and there, but he has raced. He's probably up there in the most career starts right there with others. I think he could easily go up there as somebody you look at as the Mount Rushmore number two. Then it's where there's so many arguments for this third. You could say Fontaine. I think where Fontaine edges Springer in this standpoint is the consistent factor. And what I mean by that is, again, Ricky absolutely smashed the field in season three. Season five, he was looking pretty good, and then obviously things happened. And then he's come back this season. So this is technically his third season. And as I've said, he's only run enough races to be like almost two full-time seasons. Sam Fontaine's the first driver in series history to have three appearances back-to-back-to-back in the final four. Won the championship season seven. Obviously as hot as all get out right now with, you know, nine wins in the last, or actually I would say what, seven of the nine wins are in the last two seasons. So he's doing his thing. So I would probably place Sam up there before I would Ricky. And that's not a slight on Ricky at all. Like I said, Ricky is going to be up there eventually. I think if Ricky can go out, if Ricky wins a championship this season, put it like that, then he goes up there with ease. I just more look at it as, okay, let's use the NFL for an example. Okay. You're Mount Rushmore of NFL quarterbacks. So you got your guys that are up there. I'm not even going to mention names. Let's say you got your guys up there. And then here comes Patrick Mahomes. Some say probably the best quarterback of this new generation right now. Josh Allen's up there. You got a couple others. Are we going to put Mahomes up there yet? No. That's the best comparison I can think of when it comes to putting Ricky up there. I don't think there's enough there yet. But it's close. The fourth person for me has to be, and I'm going to leave this between you and him. Whoever one of you two came to the idea of forming this league.
That would be...
And I'm talking you and Travis.
That would be Travis. I mean, I've gone over the story before, but to reiterate it, mm-hmm. We, Travis and I, ran a league called the North American Arca Series, I think it was called. I don't know. It was a league I started running. It was, I was just looking for something to do during COVID. I had just started getting into oval racing and thought, wow, league would be fun. It was literally like the first one in the list. And Travis and I ran in that a bit, and it had its, you know, its pluses and its minuses. Certainly, and not that we've not.
You don't happen to be talking about the league Friday night that I broadcast, are you?
No. This was broadcast by a gentleman by the name of Chris Rice, I think. I think it was on
like the guy from College.
No, it was called Rice Motorsports Network or something. Why do I think his name? I can't remember his first name. Anywho, it was a different league, and Travis mm-hmm. and I got to know each other a bit. We just kept running, you know, we were about the same pace.
They know each other.
In a sense. And I don't know how we got messaging, but I think he just thought one of my paint schemes was funny. Or he liked it. And so he was like, hey, I'm starting a truck series on Wednesdays. You know, it'd be fun if you want to do it. And I think there was only one or two races I did where I wasn't an admin. And then I was like, boy, I would love to help with this. So I technically would have joined up with that race, like three. I think it was the first dirt race I was officially an admin. And that was also when we started Down Under Racing together, because it was around Bathurst and we wanted to have that tie back to that. So no, Travis was, you know, as he is the owner and the founder of everything, and I have done my parts to contribute, but no, Travis was the one who got this ship rolling and does a lot of the foundational work that makes this is what it is.
Yeah, so that's where I think Travis has to be the fourth person up there. For now. And I'm pretty sure Travis would say put a driver up there, it deserves it or whatever. So, but I think for now that would be my four. Now, you asked me the same question after round number five next season or six, whatever round we're at. I might have a totally different answer. I might at that point have Ricky Springer up there. I might have Christopher Dean, who I think might be the next deserving driver up there.
Well, I will say, and I feel kind of like a jerk saying this, I don't know if I would put Calhoun on my like driver top four. And I don't mean that as a slant, but no. I think when Calhoun was being the dominant force he was when he raced, when it felt like we were all just trying to keep up with him, you know, the league was still kind of growing, not even growing, but just like figuring out what worked. And I think there are people who I can look back on who have improved immensely that weren't at his caliber, and he's had his certain amount of life circumstances that have happened, you know, good things, you know, kids and different job changes. But, you know, I guess it's hard. I don't want to deny the accomplishments that he had at that point of the series, because you shouldn't compare eras. I know that's always a challenge when you're talking about, like, who was better, LeBron or Jordan? I mean, Jordan. But, you know, the game was sort of played differently. And I think if you look at what GSLR was season one, season two versus, you know, six or seven, you know, or eight, you know, when Fontaine went on his tear, there were guys who I believe if you could transport them back in time would have been the Calhoun of that era, placing fourth, because it was kind of feeding itself, you know, the intensity of it, the practice that was going into it. You know, you look, I think that if you would have put Luke Daniels in season one GSLR or Justin Bonder, and, you know, I know he was there, but where he's at right now in season one, or I'm trying to think of another guy. Even the way that, like, you know, Strayer is running. So I don't know. I think you have to put Zach first. Then I really feel like for sheer consistency and diversity of skills, Fontaine absolutely would be, I think, my two. Three would be Springer for the sheer shock and awe he put in when he had that initial breakout season.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, I feel like again, we've kind of like, you know, the intensity keeps going up with it. I mean, the only real runaway race I feel like he's had, he should have had Atlanta locked up, but that was unfortunate, but he was doing pretty dominant that race. And then, Circus Gilles Villeneuve, he was running away from it, but I still think he would be like my three. But yeah, if you were going to do a driver based on driving performance, not, you know, maybe league influence, that's tough, because I feel like you could JW Miller, I really feel like it is teetering on there for me. He was the first guy who really feel like took the fight to you know, Calhoun. They had that incredible rivalry for a little bit and some beating and banging. And I still remember they had that insane race at Gateway. That was, I forgot who asked it. It might've been Ben Pierce, but we were talking about like, oh, we have nothing to do today. And like, okay, pay, watch an old GSLR race. And I'm like, what would be the most exciting GLSR race to watch back?
Oh, I could tell you that one, a dirt race a couple seasons ago, that the first one, Cummings one.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Or the one where puts Calhoun back in the argument for even the fourth year, because he had that incredible win going backwards over the finish line.
Bristol, yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe I'm disrespecting Calhoun a little too much.
Let me not to cut you off as you get to your, actually, you know what, do your fourth person. I want to, and because I got a rebuttal that I think will help you think a little bit more about this.
I think it still has to be Calhoun, but I think I would put him as my four. But JW would definitely be sitting in the wings. And I think you're right. I think Chris Dean, you know, he's a season one original, and I know had some incredible moments to look back on where he put Black Horizon in victory lane, and that's still something in the league's history is cool to me that they would got two wins with Dean.
So let me think. I want you to think back to what all you just said about William. And let me throw a precursor in there by saying that, look, I am not calling William Calhoun Richard Petty. Nowhere near. But a lot of things you just said is the exact reason why people say Richard Petty's on the NASCAR Mount Rushmore. And they go back to the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, when racing was totally different. And he went and just absolutely destroyed the field. As I mentioned, I think it's 1971. He goes out and wins like 36 out of 72 races that season or something. Back when they were running ridiculous amounts of races, like multiple times a week. Season one and two would be GLSR's similarity to that time period. Yes, Calhoun was absolutely blowing the field away during that time. He lapped the field at a road race. He, you know, obviously won the dirt race at Bristol going backwards. You know, did so many big things in season one and season two. And then obviously had the little one. So I feel like he deserves a spot on that mountain because of what he did in season one and two, plus what he's done up to now. Yes, he's missed a season here and there. Everybody has. But, well, I shouldn't say everybody. Most people have. But for what he did in season one and season two, which could be the build-up years, if you will, his winning and dominance was similar to that 43 car back in the day in the opening years of NASCAR. And then you mentioned JW coming in. You mentioned obviously Allman getting going. You mentioned Springer coming in. You mentioned if you want to go Justin Laxton coming in, if you want to bring all these drivers in that were good and made it better, it made it harder for him to win. Let's go back. You had David Pearson. You had the Allison brothers. You had Cale Yarborough. You had Earnhardt coming in. You had Darrell Waltrip come in. You had Cale Yarborough come in. All these drivers from the past started coming in. And after 1984, Petty never won a race again. And then even then, it was very rare when he would win up until, I think it was 1981, he won the Daytona 500 for the seventh time. And then Dale Inman left his team to actually go help out Earnhardt, which was kind of weird. But after that, Petty started kind of teetering. He was getting older at that point. Not saying Calhoun's getting older. It's different in a video game type thing. But that's the similarity here that Calhoun is when it comes to why I put him on that mountain. He was the guy to beat in the early days and still can go out there on any week, any race right now, and win. The thing is, he doesn't get the time now to run as many laps as he can, or as he does. He doesn't get a chance to do all these kind of things. So he's not going to be as dominant, or maybe have that chance to win as he used to have. The field's deeper, the league's stronger, and that kind of thing. But during the early days of this league, it was the William Calhoun show. Or it was the Keith Calhoun show, if you will. You know, that's kind of why I have him up there. And when I hear you explain that, I'm like Richard Petty in my head of why he was able to win 200 races and nobody else would do that. Can we argue right now that nobody, I don't ever see a time again in this series history that somebody will lap the entire field on a road course or on any track?
Yeah, no, I don't see it. I mean, to kind of go back to it, I mean, I think kind of echoing modern NASCAR in a bit too. Early on, I felt like you could do a bit of work to set up for a road course and you could just be a lock for the top five. No question, no sweat. Frankly, I'm just going to say it. That used to be where I could sit. My only podiums have come from road course races. Both of those, I'll admit, I worked very hard at. But I felt pretty confident because I knew just by simply preparing, I was in a very strong position. That's no longer the case. People understand that, and I feel like this is kind of similar where you used to have a Boris Said that could come in and, you know, do well and be great. I'm not saying that road ringers don't exist. I look at AJ Allmendinger. But I feel like the caliper of the average has gone up. So it's not that common anymore. So when Calhoun could come in, mop the floor with everyone, lap the field, and just dominate, and, you know, third place was how far away, that's not the case anymore. Sure, Ricky did run away with the last race, but it was still intense, and there was still battles very far down the grid. It did not let up. So I think that's an interesting comparison too, where, again, like much like echoing the progression of NASCAR itself, we used to have a pretty, you know, sizable gap between who could be in that top 3, 5 and the rest, and now it's not really there anymore. It's way too competitive, which is a good thing.
And that's and that's where I think the interesting part comes in, of where I think you could say yes or no to Calhoun. And you know, one thought that was coming to my head here as I was trying to go back and look a little bit here as I'm thinking is, during those first couple seasons, was there a competition caution at the at a certain lap like you do now in road courses? Because if so, that makes it even more interesting that Calhoun went through and lapped the field at Watkins Glen.
I don't think the competition caution was introduced until, I think, like season 3.
Because, I mean, four. even a competition caution at a Canadian Tire, the race where you finished top 3, and I was helping you with strategy and stuff.
Yeah.
You and Blaine finished 2nd, 3rd. I believe Calhoun was in a whole nother Providence.
Oh yeah, he was long gone. It was like, if I just could have
Providence, whatever.
This was back when Blaine and I were similar in speed, and then he left me behind. Cause I remember Belle Isle, the first time I took 3rd, I was faster than Blaine. And then Canadian Tire, we were like close. And now he's just much, much faster. And got himself a championship. If anything, you want to talk about, and you may have to correct me on this, this is me trying my best on my NASCAR trivia. I feel like, even though I know his favorite driver is Mark Martin, I feel like his championship was more kind of like Matt Kenseth. Am I kind of making a fair comparison there? Where, you know, just kind of always kept chipping away at it to get there.
Who was this you're speaking of? I'm sorry.
Blaine.
Okay. You could say Matt Kenseth, and you could say Terry Labonte in 1996. Those are the two, I think, big examples of that. You could also go back to Austin Dillon 2014, I think it was, when he won the Xfinity title with no wins. You could easily say Matt Crafton in the Truck Series, ironically. But, you know, on the Cup side, you got to go Matt Kenseth, obviously winning one race in 2003 and walking away with the championship. Some say is the reason we have the playoff system now. But 1996, I mean, Terry Labonte wins a championship over somebody who won 10 races with one win.
Yeah, it's just interesting seeing how there are many parallels, you know, even in simulation to...
Oh, we're all making, there's people making this predicament or prediction right now that NASCAR is about to walk itself into here in about 3 weeks. And I'm one that's already said it myself. You're going to see likely. And this is how I see this happening. Every season since the inception of this whole win and win the championship thing, you have had a different, all but Kyle Busch has won once. Kyle Busch won it twice, but you've had to win the race to win the championship. This season, you can call it a hot take right now, or you can just say, hey, everybody's saying it, and I'm totally okay with both. I'm calling it now that, especially with what has happened after the Roval race, Kyle Larson will likely win the race at Phoenix in the five car. That'll win the owner's championship for Hendrick because he's out of the points, but because of the whole 45 deal, he's still in the owner's championship. Ryan Blaney is likely going to win the championship with no wins and watch him finish second or third in this race. Do you want to talk about something that's going to create a you-know-what storm? Watch somebody like Ryan Blaney win his championship with no wins.
Right, after all the winning in. I don't know. Well, there's a lot of things NASCAR's got to figure out. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've had a pretty poor few months, weeks, months, whatever.
A lot of controversy.
Not a shortage of it. And I don't think we got time to undig all that. But guys, thank you again for listening. It's always fun getting to kind of make these comparisons of our history here at JCLR to that of the, you know, Cup Series and other series like it. So we'll definitely, in general chat, let us know what your Mount Rushmore of JCLR would look like. As always, if you're in the Chicagoland area, pay a visit to Black Horizon. It's kind of equidistant between the two major airports here in Chicagoland. And get air up for Milwaukee Mile. Don't worry. We're going to be making sure the sun's going to be up nice and high for this race.
No, watch, it's overcast.
Oh, well, it's in the morning, to guarantee there'll be enough time in the day. No, I don't think it's that. Anyways, guys, remember, take it easy in the turn one because we are just here for the GLSR.